Hi, everybody. I am back again with another recommendation for you. This one is called Mogul, and it is amazing. Over 6 episodes, it tells the story of hip-hop through one man, Chris Lighty. Chris grew up in the Bronx and was there for the birth of hip-hop. And throughout his career, he managed Foxy Brown, Fat Joe, Missy Elliott, Busta Rhymes, LL Cool J, 50 Cent. The list goes on. But in 2012, he was found dead at his home in the Bronx, and it left the music world reeling. In Mogul, host Reggie Osei talks to some of hip-hop's biggest names to tell this story. You know, I could go on and on for like hours and hours about how much I absolutely love this show, but you're not going to believe me until you hear it. So I want to share part of the first episode with you so you can hear it from the beginning. And once you're finished listening to this sneak peek, go listen to the full episode and subscribe to Mogul to hear the whole story.
Whoever the fuck you name on the planet Earth was at that funeral. Lauryn Hill, Mary, whoever on Earth. And I remember when I walked in there, like, people started crying, hugging me and shit, like, because they knew my relationship with them.
Well, of course, LL was there, and,
Nick Cannon. Chris used to manage Nick.
50 was there. Puffy was there.
So many people. My brother was well-loved. So many people.
All these people were gathered at the Frank E. Campbell Funeral Chapel in Manhattan. That's the same place where funerals for stars like Aaliyah, Luther Vandross, and the Notorious B.I.G. were held. If you were on the street outside that day, you might have thought this was a red carpet event. Celebrities stepping out of SUVs with blacked out windows. Paparazzi were there too, looking for a spot to take the perfect shot. Bodyguards did their best to hold them back. But inside, there was no award show, no new album dropping, just a casket holding the body of a man named Chris Lighty, who just a few days earlier had shocked the world.
The medical examiner has ruled the death of hip-hop mogul Chris Lighty is a suicide. Lighty was found with a gunshot wound to the head at his Bronx home on Thursday. Police say they found a black handgun at the scene, but no note. The 44-year-old worked with some of rap and R&B's biggest stars, including New York acts LL Cool J, Mariah Carey, Sean Diddy Combs, and 50 Cent.
Chris also worked with Busta Rhymes, Missy Elliott, Foxy Brown, Q-Tip. He signed some of the biggest endorsement deals in the history of hip-hop. This guy was a king and a kingmaker, which is why no one saw this coming. Powerful black men like Chris Lighty do not shoot themselves. It makes no sense. Not when he fought and thought his way out of the hood. Not when he beat the odds and didn't end up in jail. And certainly not when he achieved so much, contributed so much to the culture, and made so much damn money along the way. But somehow, there he was, lying in a casket with a bullet through his skull. Here's Chris's mom, Jessica, reading the eulogy she wrote for her son.
My son was the eldest of 6 children, born in the Bronx, New York. From a very young age, he was encouraged to be independent, dependable, loyal, and true to his family and friends. He lived that way throughout his short but eventful life. He leaves a legacy that his children can cherish and use as a benchmark in defining what makes a person successful in life. It was not the fame, the material possessions, nor even the love of a career he enjoyed every day of his adult life. It was much deeper than that. My son was a lover of God, family, friends, and life itself. And as we all do along life's journey, he made some wrong turns, but he never wavered in that love. Sleep well, my son. We all love you so much.
Gimlet Media and the Loudspeakers Network. I'm Reggie Osei, and this is Mogul, the life and death of Chris Lighty. story you're about to hear is about the birth of hip hop and the birth of a hip hop legend. But it's also about the darker side of the industry and a lot of shit that people in our world would rather not talk about. It's the story how Chris Lighty, a young kid from the Bronx, managed to rise so high, and how, when he got there, everything went so fucking wrong. To really understand Chris Lighty and hip hop, we have to go back to where they both came from, the Bronx. Chris was born in 1968, came up in the 1970s, a time when New York City was fucked up. Most of the wealthy and middle class had fled, taking their tax dollars with them, leaving the city borderline bankrupt. And of all the boroughs, the Bronx was easily the most fucked up. Crime skyrocketed, employment plummeted. Gangs with names like the Black Spades, Savage Skulls, and the Sedgwick Sisters patrolled the streets. And there was an outbreak of fires throughout the borough. The Bronx was burning, literally. All of this was happening right outside Chris Lighty's front door. But kids are kids. No matter where they grow up, they go outside and they play. Here's Chris's sister, Nicole.
What's your earliest memory of Chris?
My earliest memory? Oh, my brother. Ugh, so many. Riding our bikes on Stickney Place in the Bronx. Oh, we had to be in the house when those lights came on. But we would just ride our purple bikes up and down the street. Oh, man, memories.
Was he fearless on his bike?
No, he made us fearless. He was our oldest brother. We had to do all the dirty work. He put us up to it. And we did it, of course. We trusted him. But we played a lot. It was six of us. We did childhood stuff in an environment where you wasn't allowed to really have a childhood. And we made sure we had one.
One of the reasons they could have such a normal childhood in such a tough environment was because of Chris's mom, Jessica. She did her best to insulate her kids from what was happening in the Bronx. She kept them in solid, working-class neighborhoods. They went to church every Sunday. And she sent them to the best schools, which in Chris's case were white schools.
And I remember when he was maybe eighth grade, and he said to me, "Ma, why do I have to go to that school?" He was the only black person in there, and because he would have to fight. And I would tell him, "You are black, you're a male, and you have to not be just as good as them. You have to be better than them if you're going to succeed. That's why you have to go to those schools."
Chris may have gone to a fancy school, but at the end of the day, he always had to come back to his own neighborhood. And in that environment, being book smart was not enough. You had to be street smart. And you needed a crew, so you always had somebody to watch your back.
Yeah, you know, everybody had their little gang. Right. You know, in certain areas, like, you had to be in a crew so you could move around. Because if not, you would get bullied or picked on or whatever the case may be. And, you know, walking through projects like this, you know, every time you had to prove yourself.
That's Daryl Thompson. He and Chris met when they were a little older, freshmen in high school.
Yeah, what high school did you guys go to?
Samuel Gompers, Gompers Stompers. Once again, Gompers Stand Up, graduates 86, yes.
And from then on, they were inseparable.
You know how you get to somebody and you talking to somebody and y'all go back and forth, and sometimes you don't even have to talk, but you around that person and you already know, yo, that's my boy forever.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
And that's how me and Chris was.
Something the pair shared was a love of fly gear. This was huge for kids growing up in the inner city. Definitely for me. And that's a big part of why I'm so drawn to Chris Lighty's story. In some ways, Chris and I live parallel lives. We both grew up in New York City around the same era, Chris in the Bronx and me in Brooklyn. And like so many city kids, we fell in love with the hip-hop culture that was starting to take shape around us. We dedicated our lives to this. Chris became one of the most powerful men in the industry, while I spent over a decade as a successful music attorney. We ran in similar circles, made a few deals together, both made names for ourselves, but deep down, we were still kids from the neighborhood trying to stay fresh. When I met with Daryl, that's exactly what we bonded over.
We didn't have much growing up, so whatever we had to keep clean. Like, I had a pair of Adidas.
$54.99, right?
Yes.
$54.
$54.99. Went to Frank's on Park Avenue in the Bronx and Tremont. Park Avenue, Tremont. Favorite spot. And there was a spot called Jew Man.
Yeah. Jew Man, the famed Jew Man, which is where everyone went from uptown and in Harlem to get fresh.
Yep.
What was the color scheme, man? What was it white on what? White on black?
I had the white on white joints.
That's the white on white.
Yeah, I had the white on white. So when I cleaned it, like I said, we never had much. So what we did is we cleaned everything. I had my toothbrush.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
The whitener.
You
put on the whitener when it was all fucked up.
Right. When it was yellow.
Because when you put the white on, the Adidas would look like some zombies, man.
Exactly. And then, you know, the stripe.
Yes.
You couldn't put the white on the stripe, so you had to clean it with the toothbrush. Mm-hmm. And then while it was still a little damp, you put powder on it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's how you kept it white.
My first pair was green on white.
Wow.
So I had white with the green stripes.
Oh.
So it was, you know, that was ill, man.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's what it is. We like to stay clean.
It was a sense that because we didn't have much, what we owned was worth so much more. Clothes, sneakers, watches. Whatever you had, you wanted to show it off, to say to the world, I may not come from a fancy place, but at least I have fresh sneakers on. I'm clean. I'm fly. The problem was that if you did show off what you had, you were putting yourself at risk because people might try to jack it from you.
You go to your friend's house, you gotta make sure you don't have the right, anything clean on, because if you don't, if you have something clean on, you gotta fight the people that's there. People willing to rob you. One dude asked me, he said, what's your size?
Shoe size?
Yeah. And I said, why? He said, because I like your sneakers. I was like, are you kidding me? They had to fight for everything back in the days.
The biggest thing for children and for parents, the challenge for parents was you work hard to provide decent clothing and shoes and coats for your kids. You do not want to have your children experience being held up at gunpoint and told to strip because they want to take what your kids have, you know. And that was a challenge that every parent faced back then.
That happened to Chris?
Yeah, it did. Once.
I don't know if you've heard this story. But yeah, one of the things that he bought when he was 17 years old was that bomber jacket.
The jacket Nicole's referring to was Lighty's pride and joy, a black leather bomber, kind of like the one Tom Cruise wore in Top Gun. Bombers were essential to being fly. We all wanted one. But they were fucking expensive. You'd have to get an after-school part-time job and save up the money to cop one. Or some of the kids, they just said fuck it and laid in the cut. Wait until cats like us bought our bomber jackets and then they robbed us. And one day, while he was walking home, this is exactly what happened to Chris.
And he came home furious. And I was like, what's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? Yeah, he was furious and just grabbing anything to go attack them with. But, you know, it was definitely a turning point for you to be doing the right thing and still someone do something wrong to you. Kind of takes that innocence away, you know, or puts a pinch of reality, I guess, that you don't really want to be a part of. I mean, you know, no one wants to be violated, you know, ever. It takes something from you, and you don't want that to happen. So, yeah, I would have to say that that was his first and last of being violated. Yeah, I would have to say that.
One thing that keeps coming up in this story of Lighty's childhood, no matter how much his mom tried to protect him, he was surrounded by violence. It was out on the streets, where the rule was if you want something, you take it. And it's not like his home was a place of sanctuary either. Chris's father left when he was 6 years old, and when his mother remarried, her new husband was physically abusive. He hit her, sometimes in front of the kids. For a while, it got so bad that Chris was sent away to live with a relative.
And that was for his safety, because he was now of a size and an age that he could challenge my ex-husband. And I knew I had to leave, but I had not figured out how I was going to be able to leave yet.
With all of the chaos on the streets and inside his home, Chris needed an escape, a place where he could get away from all of this shit. But if you're an inner city kid, there aren't that many outlets. You can play basketball, handball, read comic books, or get into trouble. But Chris, he threw himself into music.
Man, I remember when Chris got his first boombox, silver boombox, about this big. Oh, my goodness. Double cassette, you know, you had to have that. Yeah, that was a big deal. That boombox is a big deal.
Early 1980s, those were the years of the boombox. Remember those? Big-ass radio and tape players that we carry around blasting the latest songs. They were so synonymous with the streets that people call them ghetto blasters.
We had dance contests in the house, all of that. Oh, it was great. I have a twin brother, you know, Mike. Me and Mike are twins. And Michael was the break dancer, so we did everything from the cardboard box on the floor. But yeah, Chris and his boombox, oh, that boombox. Man, I don't even know when he got rid of that. But that was a big part of our childhood.
What the Lighties were doing here was a little kid version of something that they were seeing right outside of their window. Across the city, DJs hooked up turntables and speakers to lampposts and would spin records in parks, courtyards, handball courts, anywhere there was a space for a crowd. We called them park jams. And it was at these park jams that what we know today as hip-hop was born. One, two, three. Coming up after the break, Chris falls in love with hip-hop.
So that was just a little snippet of episode one, but if you want to hear the whole thing, go find Mogul on your podcast app and subscribe now.